Hey there, listeners. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. Audible.com is offering Beyond the Uniform listeners one free audiobook. You can see this offer, as well as a list of every book guests have recommended on the show, at beyondtheuniform.io/books. That's beyondtheuniform.io/books. Thanks and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 83 with Chris Dottaro.
Always do the best job that you can possibly do, even if it's not something that you want to do, and also always keep relationships open.
The top three reasons to listen to today's show are, number one, Goldman Sachs Veterans Integration Program. Chris started his civilian career in this three-month program and provides a great overview of why veterans should consider applying. Number two, startups. Chris talks about using AngelList and other tools to find the right startup for you. Number three, career advice. Chris has mentored hundreds of veterans, and I really, really liked the advice he gives throughout our conversation. Things like recognizing how priorities change throughout your life, so there's no single dream job. It changes over time. And also how many times our military experience is a series of sprints from one 2 to 3 year assignment to another, which is in contrast to the marathon of a civilian career. He's got some incredible advice any vet would benefit from hearing. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes with links to all the resources we discuss, as well as ebooks, a directory of resources, and more. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Chris Dottaro. Joining me today in Washington, D.C. is Chris Dottaro. Chris, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate you having me.
So for listeners, a quick background on Chris. He is an operations manager at Lyft in Washington, D.C. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served as a surface warfare officer for 5 years. After departing the Navy, Chris participated in the Goldman Sachs three-month Veterans Integration Program before joining FBR, which is an investment bank, in an institutional equity sales role. He briefly worked at Trustify as the director of recruiting before joining Lyft. Chris is married to an active duty lieutenant and HR officer, and he is also active in his spare time coaching veterans about their career transition to the civilian workforce and working with veteran entrepreneurs. So Chris, I always like to start out by asking at what point you knew you were going to leave the Navy and how you approached that decision.
Yeah, so I left the Navy a little earlier than I thought. Coming out of the Academy, I thought I'd do longer than 5 years, but I did a year and a half on a ship, and then I went to Buds, and I left Buds after Hell Week. And once I left Buds, I kind of had to decide if there was another warfare community that I wanted to contribute to that I could see myself staying in and growing and adding value to on a long-term basis. And when I did some reflection and asking around, decided that that wasn't the case. I decided that, the best course of action would be to get out because there was no delaying the inevitable.
And what was that first job search like? I'm curious what the experience was like and also what drew you to that three-month program at Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, so my job search was made a little more difficult by the fact that my wife was and still is active duty, and she was going to be stationed in Washington, D.C. So for me, I had to determine what I want to do, because I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I knew that it had to be in the D.C. area. So I'd always kind of have an interest in finance. I was an economics major, and finance was always interesting to me. And I thought that having a basis in finance can be applicable to kind of any vertical or job industry. And so that's what I determined that I wanted my focus to be. A former lacrosse teammate of mine introduced me to the Veterans Integration Program at Goldman, went through the interview process, was lucky enough to be selected. And then went through the program, and that was that.
And I've heard great things about the program, but I don't think I've had anyone on the show yet who's been through that. So could you give like an overview of what the Goldman Sachs Veterans Integration Program is like and any advice for a vet who's considering applying to it?
Sure. It's, in my opinion, one of the best things that you can do when you get out, especially if you have an interest in finance, even if you don't, Goldman Sachs is just, you know, it's a great institution. They have a very strong veterans network. It's a very strong brand. So even if you do not stay full time, like I didn't, having it on your resume and building that network is very valuable. The program itself, the interview process is pretty intensive. I believe it's changed a little since I went through, but it's a series of interviews over the phone. And then once, if you get selected to a certain point, you'll be brought to New York to go through a super day of interviews. And how the program was structured when I was there is your first week is orientation. You know, a lot of guys like myself and girls, they left the military on a Friday, pack their stuff up on Saturday, move to New York on Sunday, and walk in a suit and tie to Goldman Sachs on Monday. So the transition was pretty drastic. That first week is more about, you know, just getting integrated and meeting some very high level people at the bank, and they put us through a quick crash course in Excel. And then the last 8 or 9 weeks, you're assigned to a specific team. And it's a kind of a two-way job interview. You live that life and decide if that's what's interesting to you. And the team decides if they want to offer you a full-time offer.
What was the team you were assigned to, and what was kind of the basic lay of the land in terms of the types of teams that there were?
So I was assigned to a team called U.S. Institutional Distribution, and they were under the Investment Management Division, and their main focus was selling Goldman products and strategies to very large pension plans. You think of like Ford Motor Company or municipal governments who have very large requirements for retirement for their employees. They're looking to invest, and part of USI's job was kind of to go after make those people clients to sell them the solutions.
And what ultimately led you to FBR? And if you could provide just a basic overview of FBR too for veteran listeners.
Sure. So FBR was one of the only full service investment banks in the DC area. And I knew that like I had enjoyed my time in Goldman. And although I was offered a couple opportunities to stay with the firm full time, I couldn't take them because I had to move back to DC. And so I started doing research a couple weeks before the internship ended and found FBR. And luckily, they were looking for an associate on their institutional sales team. And honestly, I did what most job seekers will tell you not to do, and that's just put a cover letter and a resume into an online job posting. And a couple days after I put it in there, I got a phone call and interviews worked out. And that's where I made kind of my full-time transition.
That's awesome. It's always nice to hear when that does work. That's actually been surprising too, because I always assumed that would never work. And I interviewed Stephen Muller, who went from finance into Google, and he just applied on their front page. And there's a couple others like that. So it's, you know, it, sometimes it does work. It's never, I guess it never hurts to try that route either.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it's timing. Now being in a position where I do hire people, I have a much better idea of how that hiring process works. And you know, their companies are scouring, you know, if they need to fill a position and they need to fill it quickly, they are looking at all the applications that come through. And if you fit what they're looking for, you know, they'll reach out to the hiring manager and say, "Hey, I found this resume. They applied. Are you interested in me setting up an initial screen?" So at first, I thought it was just kind of a shot in the dark. But now, having a better understanding of how the whole process works, I understand that it's a lot more about timing. And if it's the right time and you have the right requirements, then you'll probably get at least an initial screen.
That's great. I know a lot of veterans who listen are interested in finance, and so I was curious to dig in a little bit to your role as an institution's equity sales representative and how you would describe the role, but also just the a picture of that day-to-day life and what it was actually like in that role.
Sure. So I was an associate under some senior brokers, and when you think about the role, investment banks do a lot of different things. They have research analysts whose whole job is to know everything about, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 companies, from their financials, to their, you know, what's going on in the company. They have relationships with They're, you know, the CFOs, the CEOs of the companies that they cover. So one aspect of what an institutional sales representative does is provide access to those research analysts. You think of buy-side finance, such as private equity or money managers, hedge funds. Those guys are making investment decisions, and they want to talk to the smartest people in the room about those companies that they want to invest in. And so they, part of what an institutional sales rep is, provides access to research reports or to those analysts directly. That's one aspect of it. Also bringing companies public. If a company wants to raise equity or debt capital, the investment bankers get the deal, they structure the deal, then they turn it over to the sales guys. The sales guys take the deals to, again, the same clients and say, hey, we're bringing company XYZ public or raising debt financing. This is why you should invest. Can I set up a meeting with their CEO? We're going to take these guys on what's called a road trip to all investors, to investors in certain cities. And so you set up meetings for them to meet companies that want to raise capital or raise debt financing. And then there's also, you know, the standard trading. So companies want to buy and sell stocks. So you, you know, we have relationships with the traders in our banks as well. So you kind of got your hands in a lot of different things, which made it interesting. You're kind of thrown into the fire and you have to learn a lot in a very short period of time. The day-to-day can be kind of a grind. I was at my desk every day between 6 and 6:30 because we had a meeting at 7 to talk about all of our research reports that we were going to discuss that day. And then, you know, you're there well after the market ends, you know, so that you can set up the next day's meetings, or that you can do client relationship management, or there's a lot of going out and meeting clients. And so it can be like 12-day, 14, 15-hour days are the normal.
Yeah, it definitely has the reputation for being a really, really rigorous life. But, you know, I guess it's like the flip side of the coin, where it's an extremely intense, it sounds like an extremely intense lifestyle, but I imagine in that, you know, just over a year that you were there, you just learn a tremendous amount of information because you're spending so much time, you're just immersed in this role. I imagine it hones a lot of skills really quickly.
Yeah, you know, you learn a lot of qualitative and quantitative skills. You learn a lot, like, you know, obviously you're learning Excel, you're learning to read financial statements, balance sheets, you're learning how to discuss investment opportunities. So you're learning a lot from the technical side. You're also learning a lot, you know, the military, we don't really do a lot of client relationship management. We do to an extent, but you're not going out and trying to generate new business. You're not really, you know, servicing existing clients. So you learn some of the qualitative skills as well. And coming from the military, if the military is all you've ever done, you know, the concept of a P&L, a profit and loss statement, is kind of foreign, right? There's always a budget in the military. And so, like, seeing how capital is raised and how companies form and how these decisions are made and how investors think and like all these things are kind of invaluable things to learn about how the world kind of actually works.
And I want to dig into Lyft and also your work mentoring veterans, but I just wanted to pause briefly on Trustify to learn whatever you'd want listeners to know about what brought you there, the sort of work you did there, and what that experience was like.
Sure. So I did, you know, the financing, I guess it was 16 months, most of my transition. And I liked it and I learned a lot, but I also liked that, you know, during the time that I was at FBR, I had my first kid. And so I was going to work before she woke up, and I was coming home a lot of times after she went to sleep. And that wasn't really the lifestyle that I was looking for. Also, I thought, finance was a little more transactional than what I wanted. I wanted to really see kind of the other side of the table, what I was doing and how these companies grow and what is it like to build a business from scratch. And so I found Trustify through a mutual friend. I thought what was pitched to me was a pretty interesting opportunity. It turns out, like, and this is a great lesson learned, it turns out I think you always have to take risks in your career. If you're not super satisfied or fulfilled, or you think there's something else that you want to do, 100% go for it. on the same token, you know, risks are by definition risky. And I didn't do enough homework into what the company was going to be about. So it was a very short stint for me. It was a lot of great lessons learned for me in terms of, you know, what is it that I really wanted to do and who are the people I want to surround myself with. But I wouldn't change anything because I don't think if I went to TrustFly, I would have went at Lyft, and it's been a terrific experience.
So how did that come about? How did you find the opportunity at Lyft and make your way there?
Yeah, so one of the things that I would harp on is always do the best job that you can possibly do, even if it's not something that you want to do. And also always keep relationships open. One of the guys that I worked with at Goldman, his classmate in college got hired as the general manager of the DC region for Lyft. And my current boss, Steve, asked this guy, Mike, if he knew anyone who would be a good candidate for the ops manager role for the DC region. And Mike gave Steve my name. So that's how I got introduced to Lyft and through Steve. And I think like it really hammered home two things to me. And one is like, it doesn't matter if what you're doing, if you do the best possible job that you can do, good things will come of it. And to like never underestimate the relationship that you have, even if you don't think you're going to stay in a certain situation, don't burn bridges and treat people with respect. Because more often than not, doors can open for you if you treat people the right way.
Man, I love that. I love the way you put that. And I think that's so true. I just finished a book called So Good They Can't Ignore You. And I like it so much. I'm having the author, Cal Newport, on the show in a couple of weeks. And the premise of the book is that follow your passion is horrible advice. It leads to a lot of job dissatisfaction and false expectations and puts a lot of pressure on people to find, you know, similar to finding the perfect spouse. It kind of like sets this unrealistic expectation. But one of my takeaways from this book is exactly what you said, which is like, that the formula is no matter what job you're in, just do your absolute best, like refine whatever skills you can, learn whatever you can, like grow as much as you can. And like, you know, it's this attitude of like, rather than like, what can the world do for me with this perfect job? It's more of like, what can I do for other people? And I love that thought, like whether someone's in the military or out, or even if they know they're not going to be in that job, still, you know, look for that next opportunity, but just knock out of the park everything you're given, even if you hate it. Cause it's, I think that's like the only surefire lesson that I know of how to succeed. Cause that gains attention and that leads to more opportunities. And it sounds like that was the case for you as well.
100%. And you never know what skills that you're developing will come into play. I never thought like I would be the operations manager at Lyft a couple years outside of my transition. But with Trustify, what I was doing, I thought it would be more of a business development role. But what I ended up doing as recruiting director was really bringing private investigators into our network. And what that helped me is I had to become very familiar with regulations from 50 different states very quickly. I had to understand what it's like to manage 1099 independent contractors that aren't your employees and don't have to do what you tell them to do. And a lot of those skills are a lot of what I do at Lyft. All of our drivers are independent contractors and they're not employees. So managing independent contractors versus managing employees is a totally different experience. You know, you manage someone in the military and they have to do what you tell them to do, whether they want to or not. You manage a 1099 a very different way. So even if the job you're doing isn't exactly the one you want to be doing, I always encourage everyone to, like I said, do the best you can and learn, like suck everything dry that you can from the opportunity that you're in, because you just don't know what's going to happen down the road.
That's great. That's great. So I wanted to dig in. Let's learn more about what an operations manager is like, what it's like being part of a extremely high growth, I don't know if you consider Lyft a startup anymore. I still do for whatever reason, but what your life looks like and what it's part like being part of such an explosive team.
Yeah, so my life is pretty different every day, which is you know, one of the main things that I wanted out of whatever role that I had. The best way I can describe operations manager is you think of Lyft, think of supply and demand, right? So you think of demand, people downloading the app and actually using Lyft over Uber or over other competitors that are out there. That's what our marketing team focuses on. Once you open the app, my job is to ensure that you have the best experience possible. So a lot of what I do, so I want to make sure that your wait times are low, that you're not paying high percentages of prime time, that your drivers are trained, that their cars are clean, so that you continue to want to use the product. So my role, a lot of what I do is data analysis. I'm constantly looking at different service levels throughout. Like, you can imagine there's just caverns of data, right? We have thousands of different zip codes in our region and different times of day. So a lot of what I do is understand where we're strong and where we're weak. In terms of data analysis, we built a team. Me and Steve, my boss, when we first started our first week, I started about 3 weeks after Steve. We were the original employees in DC, and we sat at a high top at a co-working space trying to figure out what we were doing. And now, we've moved offices 4 different times. We have our full time permanent office here. We've got over 20 employees that now work on the team. So a lot of what I do is run kind of day to day operations and make sure that We have different products, and we have different services that we provide, making sure that the kind of leadership who are in charge of those products and services have what they need to run their teams. So it's kind of, again, a huge mix of qualitative stuff and quantitative stuff.
I imagine that a lot of people listening, they aspire to work at a company, to either work at Lyft or a technology company, popular Silicon Valley company like Lyft. I'm wondering if you have any advice on how they can make that transition from the military to a highly desirable company like Lyft.
Sure. So I think one is, again, network. There are a lot of veterans who are in not only like day-to-day roles, but there's a lot of veterans who are in recruiting at these tech startups. A woman that I worked with at Goldman, who is on the military recruiting team, is now on the recruiting team at Twitter. I know other people at Google and Facebook and Uber and some of these larger tech companies. If you're really looking for like a small startup, there's a website called AngelList, which is essentially a LinkedIn for tech startups. And you can go in and they have, job postings and you can filter, right? I think most military people, absent like a master's in finance or absent a coding background, most military people who want to get into startups, are going to be kind of funneled into the operations role. It's just kind of what we're good at and what we're used to. And again, absent of any training, it's pretty much what you're qualified to do. So you can qualify company, or you can filter companies by city, by operations and see all the different roles that are available. I will mention, most people who go to a smaller startup are 100% going to take a pay cut. Those companies just aren't at funding levels yet where they're going to pay you six figures. They're just not going to happen. So, it's all about like prioritizing what's important to you.
That's great. Yeah, and I think that's a great resource with AngelList of trying to identify those different startups, trying to find those different opportunities. I wonder, I wanted to talk a lot because I know that you've done a lot of work giving back to the veteran community and mentoring veterans about their transitions. Maybe to start off, in your work with veterans so far, are there any common mistakes that you see them make in their transition, or maybe like common misconceptions they have about what civilian life is going to be like?
Sure. So some of the common mistakes I see, and a lot of it is like, I think the most important thing that you can do when you're getting out is, one, do a very honest self-assessment of what you're good at and what you're not good at, and more importantly, what you enjoy and what you don't enjoy. One of the things I find interesting is that the military, for all of its danger and all of the job hazards that come along with being in the military, can inherently be one of the safest career paths you can take, right? Like, on the financial side, to start off, you're going to get your healthcare paid for, dental, you have access to great gyms. Financially, and you're going to get a pretty decent salary, right? Financially, you can live and live a decent life on a military paycheck. And you know, you have someone in the military whose entire job it is to tell you what the right next step is for you, right? Someone in the military is paid to look at what you've done and say if you want to screen for department head, if you want to screen for company commander, if you want to screen for command, like you need to take X, Y, or Z role. You know, everyone kind of follows a similar career path, right? And so when you get out, a lot of I think a lot of the difficulty that people have is kind of that shock value, right? They're just not used to being able or having to make those decisions on their own. And so what they do a lot of times is they make decisions based on what they think will be approved or accepted by other people, right? So like a kind of called the LinkedIn effect, they choose a job or a role that they think will look good on LinkedIn, or they think will be cool to tell their friends and their family about. And even if it's a job they hate, they do it anyway because it seems like the safe route to go. And so that's probably one of the biggest mistakes that that I see. I also think a lot of people, one of the big mistakes is like a lot of us feel alone when you do it, right? Like transitioning can be a very lonely experience. You feel a lot of times like you're the only one going through it when really like transition is a part of life. The only thing constant is change. Everybody transitions. Not just in the military, but everybody transitions constantly. In the military, whether you're doing 5 years or 35 years, you're going to hang up the uniform at some point. And so like, don't try to go it alone. Reach out to people, talk to people, see, like ask for help. I don't think there's been one experience in my time where like I've sent a message to someone or I've asked someone for an introduction that they said, no, sorry, I'm not going to help you. Veterans are in the civilian world are very willing to help other veterans, and so you should use the resources that are available to you.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I totally agree that it seems like that first change is really daunting, or it was for me transitioning from the military, and definitely agree with you on the loneliness and kind of a little bit of sense of isolation once the exhilaration wore off. And I agree with you too that's the first of constant changes, you know, that nothing is set, nothing is certain, and it's just a constant state of flux. And it's what's that quote? There's that great quote where it's like it's not learning to like change the waves, it's learning to surf. And I think it's so true of like just realizing that all of this change is so constant, so inevitable. You can't fight that, but you can learn to better ride those waves, better anticipate those changes, and kind of go with the punches rather than just trying to fight it. So I think that's really sound advice.
Yeah. And just understand that this is a marathon and not a sprint. Like the military is a series of sprints. You know, you're going to be at somewhere for 2 years or 3 years, you know, your start date, you know, your end date. And even like at like almost always, even if you're just a year or a year and a half into your current job, someone's going to tell you, hey, you need to start looking at the next thing. It's hard to make that transition to the real world where like it's a marathon, right? Like this is like it's conceivably you're going to be working unless you do very well. You're going to be working for the next 30, 40 years, perhaps. And so I think for me, what I had trouble with is I thought like I should know what I want to do right away, and I should be very good at that right away. And 9 times out of 10, that's just not the case. You know, life and this transition process is all about figuring out, almost more importantly, what you don't want to do, and then kind of bracketing like, okay, this is what's important to me. Really understand what your priorities are. I talk to a lot of people who are like, I'm getting out because I never see my kids, and I ask them what they want to do, and they say, I want to be an investment banker. And it's like, that's not going to work, right? You're going to be, if you want to see your kids, you shouldn't go into investment banking because you're going to be gone a lot. You're probably only going to see your kids on the weekends. And so I think really understanding what your priorities are and understanding that, you know, you're going to have to pick and choose. There are very few people who get like the quality of life they want, the pay they want, the location they want, the job they want, the title they want. Like there's very few people who get all of those things, all of those box checked. So you have to decide like which ones do I want to put in priority order and then go after opportunities that will fill those priorities.
That's great. And I don't think I ever put together that comparison that my experience when in the military was a series of sprints. Like you have a series of short assignments, and you're figuring out the role, you're sprinting towards the finish, and then you're moving on to the next one. And it does seem like my experience on the other side has been much more of a marathon. It is about developing and honing skills. It is about doing the deeper dive. It is about building a lot more depth, at least for me than in the military. So I think that's an interesting observation. And I wholeheartedly echo what you say about, you know, it's so much less daunting to start figuring out what you don't want to do rather than what you do want to do. And at Stanford, my favorite, this career counselor there had just talked about, you know, that's exactly what he said. And he said, you know, just start slamming those doors shut, like celebrate when you realize like, well, you know, like this is the lifestyle I want. And that's in conflict with investment banking. So great, I can close that door. And now there's everything else that I can consider. And I found that much more easily accessible than the thought of trying to figure out right away what I wanted to do. And I think that for a lot of people, that's a process of a career as well, where you might do, you know, like it seems like from your story, you started out in finance, you found aspects of that you liked. I imagine there's aspects you didn't like, and that led you to the next opportunity. And that lily pad of going from one thing to the next, that's part of what this is, rather than just trying to figure it out right out of the starting gates, which I don't think is really achievable for most people.
Yeah, and even if you find that perfect job, right? Like that's it's not going to stay that way. You know, your priorities in life are going to change. If you're single, you may get married, you may have kids, you may not. You know, your priorities are going to change as you get older and as you progress. And some points of your life, your career will be very important to you. And some points you're like, I just want something that'll pay the bills because I want us like. I have a very finite amount of time where my daughter is a year and a half or 2 years old, and she actually wants to hang out with me. So I want to make sure that I can spend dinner and bath time with her and that I can help get her ready for school in the morning. And then, you know, for me personally, at least when kids are a little older then maybe like wanting to take on a role that has a much higher time commitment, it will be something that's more attractive. The one thing that I really value about my current role is that it's flexible. I work very long hours, but I can do a lot of my job from a computer. And so I can be flexible. And so I can have a role that I find to be rewarding. And I can also be like, you know, a present husband and father as well.
That's great. Yeah, I really appreciate your saying that too, where that's so true too. Like you know, we are constantly changing. And so even that myth of the perfect job, it's like, yeah, you may find the perfect job for your 27-year-old self, but I'm betting money that that's not going to be the perfect job for your 35-year-old self or your 45-year-old self. And so, and I like that, you know, I like that you point out that aspect with your current role where it's not like there is a significant amount of work, but being able to have a little bit more autonomy around when you do that work, where you do that work, and how you do that work, I can imagine that's pretty fulfilling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been up till 11 o'clock or midnight this week because we have the inauguration coming to DC next week. So as you can imagine, that's a huge undertaking. But I leave the office at 5:30 so I can be home by 6 to give my daughter dinner and give her a bath, and then when she goes to bed at 8, I open up the laptop and I start working for another couple hours. So even though I do work a lot, I found a company and a role that allows me the flexibility to as I say, like contribute value and not contribute time.
I always love to ask about resources, and this is a little bit selfish for myself, but I think also for listeners. I'm just wondering if there's any books or podcasts or programs or websites, anything that a listener could take advantage of today that you've found helpful in your life or in your career that you would recommend to listeners.
Sure. So I think your best resources, honestly, are the people who have gone before you. You know, at least for me personally, talking, I've talked to hundreds of people who have gotten out of the military, and hearing all of the stories was very helpful to me. A book that I do really like that I always recommend is In Transition. It's from the Harvard Business School Club of New York's Career Management Seminar. It's an older book. It was published, I think, in the early 90s, but it's pretty fantastic in talking about like how do you want to evaluate what's going to be most satisfying to you and really understanding what you want out of your career. And so I think like that is a book. It's called In Transition. And this book I think has a lot of things that are applicable to guys and girls getting out of the military, but it was written for like managers of normal companies. So there's a lot of similarities I think that veterans will find, specifically for veterans who are looking to get into tech. I would look at, there's a company called Vet Tech Trek. I think they just recently transitioned their business model, but what they were doing was taking transitioning veterans to tech startup companies to kind of see what it was like. And I know that the companies were telling the guys who were running it that you know, they had certain job opportunities that were available. So Vet Tech Trek, I think, is a good thing to check out. Like I said, AngelList, I think, is a good thing if you're looking to get into tech. I think that covers it.
That's great. And for listeners, I'll add those all of those links in the show notes. And just as a reminder, Audible is giving free books to Beyond the Uniform listeners. So if you want to listen to In Transition or So Good They Can't Ignore You while you're driving, it's a great way to kind of buff up on your skills. And you can find that at beyondtheuniform.io/books. I'm wondering, were there any habits that you had to break from the military to be successful as a civilian or to be successful in your career?
Sure. So I think breaking that habit of everything needs to be a sprint was something that I'm still working on. I think one thing that everyone should remember is it's never over. This is a continuous process. It's like, it's just life, right? Like figuring out who you are and what you want to do is not a process that like, you know, I think in the military, if you want to fly a plane or if you want to drive a tank or whatever, you know, people do in the military, there's an instruction set, right? There's a PQS, in the Navy, you know, personal qualification system. There are checklists that you have to hit. And so it's pretty structured. And when you get out, obviously if you go back into the government, which is familiar, then this advice is a little less applicable, but, you're constantly learning. And so for me, having to break that model of like, okay, where's the playbook? Where's the checklist? Let's get this done as fast as possible so we can move on to the next thing was something, that I had to break and that I still work on, every day. So that's probably the biggest habit that I had to break. The other thing I'll say is the civilian workforce is just different, right? Depending on what you do in the military, there can be kind of a locker room feel about what you're doing. Most jobs in the civilian workforce are just not that way. So you kind of have to change how you talk to people. You have to change how you present. If you're giving a presentation, you kind of have to change how you present. I think you have to be much more understanding of kind of tact and executive presence in the civilian workforce than you do a lot of times in the military. So I think those are probably the two main things that I would touch on.
That's so funny, man. It's I definitely agree with that. And it's, I think most people, and myself included, you think of the military and you think of like very buttoned up, you think very well presented, which it is. And when I do think back to a lot of my time on watch and my time, the bulk of my time in the military, It was that more like kind of a locker room feel and, a camaraderie and a relation and like just teamwork that's, very much essential. And it I can see how that is like kind of antithetical to a lot of the interactions in my experience on the civilian side, where you are a little bit more buttoned up in those interactions, where like, yes, it's cordial, but there's a certain level of professionalism in those interactions that seems like a shift. And I hadn't thought about that before. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, in the military, to take it even further, like a lot of your coworkers are your best friends, right? Like when you're going through training, or like whether it's flight school or BUDS or OCS or IOC or whatever I'm keeping more towards the Navy because that's what I'm familiar with. But when you're going through those things, a lot of your classmates or the people that you train with are your best friends, and you're going through a tough thing with them, and so you form those bonds. that a lot of times you just don't form in the civilian world. A lot of times, like, people are there to do a job and they don't want to be friends with you because they want to go home to their family, or they have friends, or like they're very, you know, they're very aware of their reputation and how they're perceived in the civilian world. And so they don't want to mix kind of business with friendship. So that's a huge shift as well. I know some of my closest friends and all of the people who were in my wedding were mostly military guys. And I think that's just a lot different when you get into the civilian world.
That's great. I'm wondering about failure. You know, I think that it's something that fascinates me lately. I just think that so much of the juice of what we learn comes from the mistakes that we make. And I'm also cognizant that it, you know, for I think a lot of people in the military, mistakes are very, very much avoided because the consequences are so high. And yet on the other side, once you get out, you know, mistakes are much more commonplace and really where a lot of growth occurs. And so I'm wondering if there's any mistake that sticks out to you since you've left the military that you experienced and kind of what you learned from that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I definitely agree with you. I think you know, you learn the most from bad experiences. It's kind of like, you know, you touch the stove and it's hot. You don't want to touch that stove again. I remember a great quote from school that our gunny told me is you learn a lot from your good leaders and you learn even more from your bad leaders. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, I'm personally a huge fan of making mistakes. I make them every day and all the time. And I think, like, it's not a negative experience as long as you learn from it. And as long as you, like, continue to grow. I think my biggest mistake was probably not doing enough research when I left finance into the type of company that I wanted to join. I think I was just I kind of had blinders on in terms of, like, the opportunity sounded too good to be true, and in fact it was. Coming from the military, I just took people's word at value, right? Like, if you said you did something, or you said you went to school somewhere, or you said, like, this is what we're going to do, that's just what I assumed was the gospel, because that's how people operate in the military. For the most part, people are very honest. They're very transparent. They're like, if somebody says they're going to do something, or they did something, or they envision you doing this or something like that, that's the truth. I think for me, it was a great lesson learned in that, like, you know, you don't have to be skeptical of everyone you meet, but you should follow your gut. And you should do, like, these are life-changing decisions for you if you're going to make career jumps. And you should do as much research as you possibly can, before you make that leap of faith.
Yeah, that's great, man. You know, it makes me think too. I just feel like, that dose of skepticism. I'm wondering now, like, if I feel like I would have been a better officer had I had more of that when I was in the Navy, that healthy sense of skepticism, yeah, of just kind of looking at things from different angles. So it's hard for me to know how much of that's, like, age at this point versus civilian versus military. But the one that really rings true is I just always remember in, like, business school, I would meet someone and they would, you know, they would say, like, oh, I built this satellite. And I was like, holy shit, this person built the satellite. And then you dig in deeper and you're like, oh, they were part of a 300-person team responsible for the software,
yeah,
part definitely of this 5,000. You know, it's just like, it was such a different – and I viewed it at first as dishonest, and it's just a different language. But, like, I know for me, I would never say, like, I was, like, you know, responsible for launching a missile. It's like, no, I was part of a 50-person team that launched missiles. It was just like – it was just different a different way of speaking. And so that skepticism, I think, is helpful of, like, and I've done that same thing so many times too, where someone just says something and I'm like, oh, well, this must be the best company, or they must be the best person. And it's like, no, that's something I need to have, you know, kind of overcome, of just that blind faith in someone's integrity. That's, it may not be an integrity thing as much of just a difference in culture, but it's certainly something I relate to.
Yeah, well, and at first you almost take it personally, right? You're like, why is this person lying to me? I don't understand. And then as it continues to happen more and more frequently, you just realize, like, maybe my expectations need to be adjusted, and maybe, like, the way I see the world is obviously, you know, a combination of my experiences and just kind of my mind works. And so maybe, like, my experiences have led me to believe that people should act certain ways, and I need to readjust my expectations. But yeah, it is a lot different. You know, I think the big difference is that in the military, you're taught to put others first, and you're taught to selling yourself is something that's pretty looked down upon, right? Like people who kind of brown nose or you know are overly polite to try to get ahead are kind of looked down upon by their peers. In the civilian world, it can be a lot more kind of dog eat dog, and the way to get ahead is to kind of take credit or wordsmith your accomplishments a little bit. So it's definitely an adjustment period, I think, for when you get out.
Yeah, totally agree. I think that, I just published an article on task and purpose on that, and just saying in the first 50 interviews I've done on this, that's one of the, I think that was number three on the list, is the difficulty in selling oneself. And it is so counterculture for veterans to, you know, I think that my experience was, you know, you do a lot of selling for, this is my subordinate and he deserves a promotion for this reason. And we like sell for other people, or we sell to a team, or we sell, you know, a watch bill. But the thought of selling ourselves is like, whoa, you don't do that, you know? And then getting in an environment where you're competing with people who are really good at it, because they've had 5-10 years of experience while we were doing something else. And so just realizing that makes your skin stand up, and trying to change your attitude around it, where you are able to not sell yourself short, and to be honest in a way that talks with confidence about what you've done. And not, you know, it's funny, as I think of the way that I did this, you overcompensate and you oversell, and then you just kind of, you know, it's like this, it's learning this new skill set just like anything else. But I really appreciate the way that you put that, of just being able to be fair with yourself and be able to sell yourself in a way that benefits you and your family and doesn't put you at a disadvantage.
Yeah, there's, I mean, the big thing in the civilian world, there's a finite amount of resources, right? And some of those resources are time. Some of those resources are money, like capital, if you're trying to build a company. Some of those resources are positions that are available, or promotion, right? Like we're not as familiar with the scarcity mindset in the military as perhaps we should be. And in the civilian world, a lot of what you do operates from a scarcity point of view, right? There's a finite amount of resources, and so selling is a required skill, at least if you want to like jump on the hamster wheel and play the game, right? If you want to kind of, even if you want to start your own business, you still need to have money. I think that adjusting to kind of that scarcity mindset is something that I think a lot of people struggle with.
I love that. My wife talks about that a lot as well, and I totally agree, like just not viewing things as scarce and just viewing abundance, and just it's very powerful. Well, I know we've covered a lot here, and I wanted to make room at the end just to open it up for anything else we didn't talk about, anything that regarding mentorship or things that have helped you in your personal life or professional life that you would want to share with a veteran audience.
Yeah, I think just a couple last points is one kind of hammer home that like your priorities are now your own. When you're in the military, you have signed, you've signed a document that said, like, I will put the needs of everyone else above mine. And when you get out, that's a big shift. It's different, right? And so really determining what your priorities are and what's important to you, what does success look like to you? Defining that, I think, is probably the quickest path to making this a successful experience. If you determine that I'm getting out because I want to be with my family and I want to live in a certain area, then and the job is not as important, then you know, that's one route. If you're like, I'm getting out because like the problems that I want to solve are in mergers and acquisitions, and I don't care how long it takes, or I don't care where I live, I want to work in mergers and acquisitions. Just determine what success, what your priorities are. I think, that's something that I would want to leave people with. And then just kind of embrace it, right? Like this whole thing is a journey. Don't look at it as something that's like scary and daunting and overwhelming, because if you look at it that way, it will become scary and daunting and overwhelming. Like, embrace this thing, right? This is something that like, you know, it's just life. you're gonna transition. And then I guess the final thing that I would say is don't let the military be like who you are. You know, the military is something very noble that you've done. And it was a job that you did that is to be commended. And you know, less than 1% of able-bodied people choose to serve the military in our generation. So you're in a group that's pretty select. But remember what's going to make you coveted. You know, people don't kind of want someone who's entitled because they think they're part of this elite group. People want to surround themselves with you, and they want to hire you because as a veteran, you've kind of developed like a dogged sense of determination. You're used to putting the team first. You're used to carrying yourself with character and integrity. You're used to always being willing to help. Those are things that have been ingrained in all of us. And so I would just stress, like, don't let the military be your identity, and don't let it be the best thing that you do. Don't be like that, I always use the analogy, don't be like that high school quarterback who they come back from high school, and like the first year you see them after high school and they come back to it like a party, you're like, hey man, it's good to see you. And then like every year after, they keep coming back to the same parties, and like the kind of the allure wears off. Like, don't let this be the best thing you've ever done. Be something great that you've done, and use the skills that you've developed to do other great things in your life.
That's awesome. It's like the college football glory days, you know, or high school football, yeah, exactly. You know, or junior high football. Yeah, I agree. It's funny to hear you say that, because I echo what you're saying of like noticing how for a lot of people, especially when they first transition, that's like that is their identity. And so they kind of cling to that even more, and it becomes like everything about who they are. And I think there's a danger there. I feel like for me, it was the opposite, where I got out and I was like trying to distance myself as much as possible from that, and trying to make up for lost time by doing all the things I hadn't done. And so I think it's like that middle path between the two of like not embracing that as your sole identity and not running too far away from it. Cause I feel like, you know, now at a point where I'm reconnecting with a lot of those roots and seeing the value of those things that I kind of shied away for whatever reason for quite a while. But yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. And I just appreciate in our conversation, just your transparency and all this and all the work that you're doing to give back to the veteran community by talking to hundreds of people on top of a really rigorous job and demanding job. And just the advice that you give, I think, is really spot on. So thanks for connecting and sharing all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the best thing that we can do as veterans is pay it forward. Everyone's gonna need help and advice at some point, and I know that I would not be where I am if there wasn't a bunch of people who were willing to jump on a phone call at 9 o'clock at night after they worked a full day and put their kids to bed and talk to me while I was getting out. So I think, like, you know, again, going back to kind of serving a purpose greater than yourself, it's hard to find that in the civilian world, but I think, you know, I kind of tried to distance myself as quickly as possible from the military. And now that I've been out a couple of years, I'm not going, you know, back to the other extreme, but I think, you know, going back to help people and to provide value or advice as I can, something that we should all be doing.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans. It can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyonduniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyondtheuniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.